Today's program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. Don't laugh, Sarah.
Sorry.
I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. I'm here with, as you can probably tell, a friend of mine, Sarah Crathan, the co-owner of Sorella. Sarah, I've known Sarah for many years now, even before they opened Sorella. And Sarah focuses on the front of house and the wine program there. I look at you, Sarah, as definitely as a peer, but someone I have a lot in common with. We both opened up our restaurants when we were very
too young.
Very much too young. have learned very much on the job, but you've done exceedingly well. Forbes 30 under 30 and 4 stars in New York Magazine, and I've been in several times, many times, and I'm a huge fan of what you guys do, so I'm very excited to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's really good to be here.
Tell us about your early life. You're still in your early life, but...
Yeah, technically. I feel old, but I am still pretty young.
But before you opened up Sorella, what had you been doing?
Well, I've always worked in restaurants. I started when I was 16 in high school. And then I went to culinary school right after high school and ended up not wanting to cook, but still loving the front of the house. And then I met who ended up being my business partner there, Emma Hurst, and moved to New York, ran a restaurant in Soho for a little bit. And then we just kind of went for it.
Yeah, you were at Zoe in
yes.
Soho.
Yeah, that was my first New York City job.
And tell us about that. Unfortunately, Zoe's not with us anymore.
It's not there anymore, but definitely an experience. It was a staple. It was kind of like my mentor in college, John Storm, and I really wanted to work for Danny Meyer, actually. It was like my dream, and he kind of said that Zoe was like a feeder for Union Square Hospitality, and it would be a good place because I really wanted to be a manager because I didn't realize that managing restaurants is one of the worst jobs in the world at the time. So I went to Zoe, and I got to work with Stephen Lafredo, who is still someone that I'm friends with. He's a consultant now. He does a lot of great stuff. Zoe was it was really busy when I worked there. We're doing crazy brunches. It's a retail store, like most things in Soho now, but...
And that, now it's in fashion and completely acceptable to have lots of American wines on your list. But I feel like Zoe was
that was the first like all American list, and it was a crazy list. It was huge. It was a really big list, and I had to count the bottles every night.
You had to count all the bottles every
night. Every night, they made me do inventory
like daily
every
inventory.
Night. Wine, yeah.
So do you your manager to count
no.
the bottles every
no,
single night?
No, but I try to explain to her whenever she complains about what she has to do, all the things that I had to do that she doesn't, but she doesn't get it.
And how did guests receive this all-American wine list at the time? Were they like,
people loved it. Like it was sought out for it. There were definitely like a lot of like big, like it was a big lunch place, and there were all these like that was my biggest experience with regulars in New York, like people from all the different businesses around there, and there were some like guys who came in just for really expensive bottles of American wine for lunch, and they wouldn't finish it. I got to drink a lot of really good American wine when I worked there, because people really liked American wine. I think they still do.
Yeah, and I think they're liking it even more.
It's definitely an easier sell than Italian. You know, it's like every table always says like, I don't know much about Italian wine. It's like the opener for every
but I've been to Napa. I've been to the North Fork or the Hamptons, maybe the Finger Lakes. You hear people who've been to a lot of these regions, but maybe haven't been to regions in Italy.
No.
And tell us about your time at CIA. That's a culinary program, but you ended up focusing on the front of house.
I went through the culinary program, and then I became a fellow in one of the restaurants doing front of the house. So it was basically like managing a restaurant, and we had a new class every 2 weeks. So we had to do like a full staff training and open for service every 2 weeks. It was like an opening every twice a month, which was a lot of fun.
And when people come to you and ask about your time at culinary school, do you recommend going to culinary school?
Oh, I'm one of the big advocates for the CIA, and I know there's all this like there's always all this hype and people at the CIA, and I think there was like a walkout recently because they're so angry at the standard of like all of these things. But I went with
There were students who weren't wearing like clean chef's coats or something. Like
I don't even know. It's like they're letting anyone in now. You don't have to have as much experience, and they're accepting front of the house experiences, restaurant experience for culinary school. And I mean, I went to culinary school with only front of the house experience, and I wanted to learn it. I thought that's why you go to school. But I was surrounded by people who had been working in kitchens for a long time, who were really good. It was very intimidating, but I loved it. I learned something new every day. I had a great time. And with any degree, you know, you do what you're gonna do with it. You can't like say like, oh, all the students are bad at the CIA, because there's like a bad, like, there's plenty of bad people mm-hmm. who come out of any program. But
what about the argument where some people say that your time's better spent working in a restaurant?
I think it's different for everyone. I mean, I needed to learn the basics. I had no idea. I had never cooked when I went to culinary school. And I mean, I cooked at home. My mom cooked sometimes. She didn't use salt. That was a really hard thing for me to understand. It was like handfuls of salt. It looked like so much to me, but it was the right amount. And I think that it's different for everyone. I have friends who've done both, who've worked in restaurants and kitchens forever and went to culinary school and maybe regret it sometimes. I know, like, I mean, Emma, my partner, she hated culinary school. It's not something that she's, like, happy about, but I think it's different.
But she met you at culinary school.
Yes, that's the good thing that came out of it, and she'll say that too, but she didn't have the best time, but she was one of those people who just, like, she knew how to cook, so she didn't really feel like, she felt like it was kind of boring for a while, and I just found it to be really exciting.
And when you and Emma first met, was it an instant click, and
you guys were both
friends?
Or? No, we hated each other at first. It was like a saga, but she came through, when I was a fellow, she came through the restaurant as a student, and I would see her all the time, and I didn't know who she was, but she would eat in the restaurant all the time, and I don't know, we just had like this thing, and I apparently was not very nice to her, and she noticed it, and I didn't realize it. It ended up, her dad actually connected us, because it was like her birthday, and he called, and he wanted us to sing happy birthday to her in the kitchen, and she was back there, and I like talked to this man, and I was like, this guy's like the coolest guy I've ever talked to. His daughter's got to be cool. Like I must have overlooked it. I should give it a chance. So I like tried to talk to her that day, but I like accidentally made it worse, and then we just became friends.
Wait, how do you go from accidentally making it worse to just becoming friends?
I like started the conversation, yeah. But the big joke was that it was her birthday, and her dad told me that she was turning 20, and she had been coming to the restaurant and drinking there for, I mean, I don't know how long, and I was like a real stickler for underage drinking, always, because I grew up in Key West, and that was a big deal there. So on our way out of the kitchen, when the chef sent her home because it was her birthday, and on her way out of the kitchen, I said, happy birthday, now I know how old you are. I don't know why I said that, but it sounded like I was going to get her in trouble, and she was like really, really angry, and called her parents, freaked out, yelled at her dad for calling the school. And then we just kind of started talking a little bit each day, and I, as I said, I really wanted to work for Danny Meyer, and she had done her externship at Union Square, mm-hmm. So she was like, I'll take you for dinner there, I'll introduce you to some people, and we did that. We had like a date in New York City, and I'd never really enjoyed being in Manhattan. I would come in and like go to Grand Central and stay kind of around there, like Central Park, and that was it, and then I'd go back up to school. We just had this amazing day together, and we sat, and she was like, we're going to be roommates someday, and we're going to open a restaurant together. And I was like, okay.
It all happened during that one dinner.
It was one night, yeah.
And then when you got back, did you start planning the restaurant right away, or what was
the process? Well, she was actually still in school, so I had accepted the job at Zoe. I mm-hmm. went with her to this dinner knowing I already had a job, but I figured I'd meet people anyway. And then, you know, she started coming to the city when she could, and I was still working at Zoe, and then we kind of, like, we always talked about it, but we thought we had to do something first. Like, we didn't, you know, you know this. Like, how do you prepare yourself for opening a restaurant? There's no real way. There's no right or wrong way, I don't think, to figure it out. So we just started doing catering so that we could meet people. And then we met people like you. We ended up convincing someone to believe in it. We went to Italy. We spent, I think, like 3 weeks in Italy, which in our heads we were there for like 3 months. But when we started talking about it years later, it was like, no, it was actually just a couple weeks, wasn't it? And then, yeah, we just opened a restaurant.
And do you still, is that catering company still going? Are you still continuing?
No, it never really went anywhere. I really like the name, but, and I would like to, maybe I'll revive it someday because I really love catering, but no, we don't, we let that one go.
And tell us about your time in Italy. Where were you? I imagine mostly in Piedmont.
We were all over the place, but we started in Piedmont. Mm-hmm. So we spent some time in Torino, and then we were in Alba and all around, like Monforte and Barbaresco and Barolo. And we drank and ate really, really well. It was during the Truffle Festival, actually, so... Alba was amazing. It just smelled like truffles.
We were staying
across from the Nutella factory, so we'd wake up to the smell of Nutella and then like smell truffles all day. It was terrible.
And
but we did some from there. We went through like Emilia Romagna, and then we were in some different places in Tuscany, and finished the trip in Rome.
And I can see why Piedmont, though, especially at that time, was really influential to you. Restaurants, in a way, Piedmontese.
We had gone to Italy with the, like, we didn't really know what direction we wanted to go with Italian. We just knew we both really loved Italian. And Piedmont was, like, sealed the deal as soon as we were there. We went to, like, the restaurants were so old, and they were family-run, and that's all we were trying to, like, do in New York. It wasn't, we knew we were young, we knew we wanted something small. We wanted to cater to restaurant industry people like ourselves, so it was it spoke to us, everything about it, the hospitality more than anything else. We were nobodies, but we'd like mentioned we wanted to open a restaurant, and you were just like treated like gold, and they would talk to you about everything. And we had like a walking tour of an old Monforte with like this crazy restaurant owner who like spent the whole day with us and was like just like gave us gifts at the end. Everywhere we went, they would give you a gift. It was just
Well, I'm sure it didn't hurt that you were two young, attractive American women.
I don't like to think like that, Joe. I think that we were just really talented.
Yeah, a combination of your wits, that you're in the industry, and that you're both very pretty.
You know, we were definitely eating a lot back then, so I don't know. No, it helped. I don't know.
I knew you guys when you were 23. You know, and you were still you're very attractive. Okay, so you get back to New York, and is it immediate? You start looking for a new location, and it's full speed ahead.
We like started like everyone does. The first thing we did was start trying to develop a menu, mm-hmm. which is funny because in culinary school, I had a chef who once said that the first thing any chef does when they're trying to open a restaurant is think about the menu, and that shouldn't be the first thing you think about. But of course, it was the first thing we were thinking about. And then we just started to work on a business plan, even though you can't really rely on a business plan in a restaurant, I don't think. So we started that, and then started looking for locations after we figured that out. We knew we wanted to be downtown. We originally thought East Village, but it was kind of overpopulated with a bunch of stuff. So we started looking in the Lower East Side, and we found like a really obscure location that was a really good deal, and just kind of happened. It happened really fast. I didn't even believe it was happening until the night it opened.
Wow. And yeah, and that location it's gotten much more busy since you've opened. There's been
there's stuff happening still, but it's still Allen Street is still like is off the beaten path. There's,
across from the Chinese restaurant
with flashing lights. That's why our sign lights up. We're just trying to compete, but theirs is lit way better. They have more experience with it, clearly. And all the different colors. It's really big.
But I love you're kind of walking through Chinatown, you're going on Allen Street, and then you find this oasis. It's so comforting and cozy, but really elegant in there.
And that's what we always wanted, and we get a lot of people who ask why we have riddling racks, or why we have wood on the door, which is riddling racks. We have, like, the front is covered in riddling racks. And we wanted to get away from Chinatown. Like, we didn't want you to sit at our bar and have a street view of that. We wanted you to pretend you were someplace else. Like, that was the idea of it. Maybe it's a little too hidden at times, but people knock on the door sometimes. You would probably do better if we just locked the door.
Well, I love the decor. I feel like it's super cozy, especially on these, like, cold winter nights. It's just a great...
It's too cold to go anywhere in this weather. But yes, it is a good duck away.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you more about the wine program and your inspirations there.
Okay.
So we'll be right back.
You're listening to Burgundy by The Hollows on heritageradionetwork.org.
My lover's hands were burgundy when last she came to me. Stripped rubies that bloomed upon her sleeve, the harvest moon and ivory wound that spilled its ghostly stream. My lips formed a question that she told me.
Your father's hands were wandering, his eyes were on my face. When you went out a riding, his heart burst into dark flames. Your miner's axe was howling, black thunder cracked the sky. The blood on my hands is his, God's doom is mine.
The following program has been brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential small hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
We're back on In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm here with Sarah Crathan, co-owner of Sorella. Sarah, tell us about the wine program there. I've always really enjoyed the wines. I feel like you have a lot of small producers, all Italian.
Yeah, that was the goal. It was actually you were one of my wine list inspirations. If you remember when I, like, made you meet with me one morning a long time ago about how to write a wine list, because I had never done it before. You gave me some good pointers and rules. But yeah, I just focus on small producers, kind of obscure things. I like finding different varietals that people don't necessarily know about. Definitely a lot from Piedmont. Young wines, because we're young.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of it. If a wine has a story, I always fall for a good story.
I love that. Well, I hope that I was helpful to you at that time.
You were really helpful. You gave me really good advice. But I had never done it. I'd never even been a wine buyer. I was like, I could pour wine, I could open wine, I could talk about wine in a way that I understood wine, but never about, like, the fancy stuff.
When did you start to feel comfortable as a wine buyer?
I'm still trying to get I guess once it was done, like, once the list was done, mm-hmm. and the first big buy was, like, a lot of fun. That was pretty big. And then it was good. I work with people that I like. If I don't like a rep, I won't work with them anymore. I think that's a big part of it. And that's something that makes it more comfortable. And you have to set boundaries. And once everybody kind of knows your rules, it's fun to do.
Yeah.
In the beginning, it's awful when, like, just, like, anyone shows up and like no appointment. They're just banging on your door. No idea what you might have going on. But yeah, I'm good with it now.
Yeah, I mean, that was for me the big change when I realized, wait a second, I need to set up systems and boundaries and ways. Otherwise, the wine reps will just come and they'll come at all bad hours and bring stuff you don't care about.
It's easy to fall for it in the beginning, too, because it's just like exciting and you love wine and all these people are showing up.
Yeah,
it's
like, wait a second.
Oh, I can taste wine. You want me to taste wine? Sure, I'd love to.
Yeah, I can taste all of this stuff.
Like, right now, it's 10 in the morning. Okay. Oh, wait, no, that wasn't a good idea. I should have arranged that on a better schedule. So, yeah.
All right, well, tell us a little bit about your cookbook that just came out.
Yep, so the Sorella cookbook came out at the end of October. It was released. It's a really fun book. Emma's recipes, even though she's not at the restaurant anymore, a lot of things that have been on the menu, a lot of favorites that people love, and it's actually a usable cookbook. It's really, we wrote it to be like fun and young. Mm-hmm. It's got a lot of little stories and kind of.
We have some cocktail recipes in there.
Cocktail recipes. There are drink notes with some recipes for pairings, like also like what you should drink while you're cooking something.
What's a tip for what you should drink while you're cooking?
I mean, it depends. So, like I make jokes about like if it's like a harder thing, like have like a stiff cocktail to kind of loosen up so that you can have fun while you're cooking. But it was just something we thought of because when we had our catering company and when Emma and I were roommates, we always, like, were testing recipes in our apartment. Like, that's where we did it all because we were roommates. So we would always, you know, have something to drink while we were recipe testing. And when this all came about, I was like, hey, we should bring that into this because it was a big part of what we did. So it's a great book. It's lots of pictures, like fashion-y photos. It's very colorful. It's a great book.
Yeah. I really like, there's a photo of you stretching, going for a run.
Yeah, we did it. We put a special little bit in the book about like exercise, just because it's something that I think is really important for people in our industry to find something that they can focus on that's like a healthy thing. We have plenty of bad habits between like all the drinking and the eating, and we both found Pilates, and then I started running, so... We wanted to put that in the book in some way to kind of bring awareness to the fact that you can't do it forever.
You can't
just eat and drink all you want.
When did you find running?
I started running, I guess it's been like 3 years now.
Yeah, I had the same experience the first couple of years of opening up the restaurant. I definitely let myself go to a certain extent. Getting out of the restaurant at midnight, 1 a.m. and then you're starved and
yeah, that was definitely a bad one.
And eating and then going directly eating and drinking, going directly to sleep, is not the healthiest.
No. It's not ideal.
And you guys are down in Chinatown, I'm sure there was
plenty of trouble to get into. I also ate at Sorella like every night for the first year. I was there closing. We were open till 2. I was like, I had pasta. I used to eat the pâté, which isn't on the menu anymore. It was like a chicken liver mousse with a fried egg and bacon on top. It's like, I can't even imagine taking a bite of that anymore. It would kill me. But yeah, running is, I think the mental part of it also, just like that. I think I actually see this a really funny massage therapist, and she, for the first like year I saw her, she would constantly say to me that I wasn't exhaling, that I didn't know how to exhale, and I was like, no, I'm definitely breathing, I'm talking, I must be breathing. She'd be like, no, but you're not exhaling, like actually just like letting it out, and when you run you have to, so it's like if I don't, like it's like my chance to breathe for the day.
I love that. I miss seeing you on the West Side Highway. We used to bump into each other.
I think our schedules are different. Oh wait, no. You left campus.
Yeah, I
you
left campus.
Restaurant campus.
It was you, me, and Colin from Fatty Crab. And
yeah, I still run with Colin from time to time. We still get out there. I run with John Winterman from Danielle because he was in the neighborhood. There's like a lot of restaurant people in the West Village, and you see them running. It's like a nice. It's a nice little thing.
Yeah, and one of our great wine reps, Adrian Chalk. I don't know if you know Adrian he's from Angel Share. I see him. He has a great lab, and they're always running on that west side. So Emma moved away. This was your business partner and your and your roommate and your friend.
Best friend, yeah. She moved to Hawaii, to the North Shore of Oahu.
Why would she ever want to leave this for...
this beautiful winter wonderland? I can't imagine. No, she did. She decided she wanted to take a little break from cooking and kind of regroup. I think that's the other side of doing it really young, is that you kind of can realize, like, wait a second, what have I done with my 20s? I want to do something else, which she ended up wanting to do, and she has a house on the water. It's very nice. She is getting island fever and coming back to the mainland for a bit in a couple months, so I'll get to see more of her, and that's exciting. But yeah, she left, and I hired our opening sous chef to become the chef of Sorella. Her name's Molly Nickerson. She was at Maria right before she came to us, and she's been the chef now for a little over a year, and she really, I don't know, she gets it. She's one of those people who just really gets it. Her food is fantastic.
And what was that transition like for you personally? Don't have to go too personally.
You know what? It was fine. It was the right thing to do. You know, it's kind of like, it was the most mature conversation I think we've had. It was just like the right time. It was the right thing to do. And it was exciting to work with a new chef and have like that kind of thing, you know, like being roommates and best friends and working together for a long time. It's not that we were, you know, not getting along or anything, but it's nice to have like a fresh set of eyes come in and be like, oh, I want to do this a little differently. I mean, she took some things off the menu right away that I thought would never come off the menu. And I was like, scared at first, but then after it was like, oh, that was a really, it was a really good move that did need to come off of the menu. And I was attached to it for no good reason. She's put a lot of, she's kind of dialed it back to very, very Italian. I think Emma will say she had ADD, and she would go someplace or travel someplace and then come back. Like, she would go to Hawaii every year and come back, and all of a sudden we would have, like, something really,
pineapple ravioli or something.
It was like a Thai play on an orchietti with, like, duck and peanuts and cilantro. It was like... like kind of Asian, there was like a little bit of fusion happening, and it was all really good, but I just, there were some times where I was like, all right, I'm getting a little confused here, where is Piedmont? I don't see it anymore. So she really, Molly coming in and doing like a vitello tonnato dish was just like a nice, like, oh yeah, this is the good stuff, this is what I remember.
Well, I have to agree, throughout the various stages from when you first opened to a few years back when we went after the Forbes party, and I just went with my girlfriend Alyssa a couple of months ago now, it's always been really, really delicious. Always found delicious things to drink there and eat. Oh, and one of the cool things that you've done that you don't see around too much is having a selection of Italian craft beers, even on tap, which I think is pretty awesome that you guys do.
That was definitely Emma who wanted. I'd be lying if I said I liked beer. I just don't like beer, so that's always actually been a challenge. I have to trust, like, I always find like someone on staff to be like, okay, you taste this beer. Is this a good beer? Because they all taste the same to me. But yeah, we did. We found this really cool company that was working with Union Beer, and they were bringing in like crazy craft beers from like Piedmont in kegs, and it's like you never really know what you're gonna get. Like, the size of the keg is weird, and they're really expensive, but they are really cool. Most of them have a really good story, so yeah, try to do something different.
All right, and then a few years back you opened up Stellina as well.
Stellina's our little gelato outpost. We do like our funky gelato at Sorella. I think you know about it. And it's something people really like, so we decided to kind of branch out and do just a gelato focus. It's just it's a takeout window on the street now. We turned the seating of it into another dining room for Sorella. It seemed to make more sense, but yeah. Nice. It's our little gelato brand.
I love the gelato there.
Well, it's fun. We take like some Italian classic, but it's pretty American for like the flavors, and they're and we like name them crazy things.
Yeah, and you have like that soft, creamy gelato.
Yeah,
but
as far as texture, I think that we nailed it. Cause it's hard. When you have gelato in Italy, you know this. Like, you come back, and you're just like, it's just not the same. You can't find it, and it is. It's that texture. Cause we tend to make everything. It's too cold here. We just like feel like the gelato is too hard. It should be like soft and like melty even.
Yeah. Awesome.
Sounds
it's so I want gelato, right? I don't care that it's like 10 degrees outside this winter. I want gelato. Right?
Yeah, when people come to Stellina this in this weather, we're like, you are
respect.
You're a trooper. you know what you love.
And do you have anything planned for the horizon? Anything coming up soon?
You know, I don't know. No, just at Sorella. Not like you. I don't have another restaurant yet. But no, we're just kind of trucking along, enjoying it, still having fun.
So most nights we can come and see you at Sorella.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Years later. I mean, we just turned 5, so that's kind of
wow, congratulations.
Weird, right? Yeah.
That's right. You just had your 5th birthday.
Yeah, December 1st. Threw a big party. It's a good party.
Well, if you guys haven't been, I encourage you to check out Sorella. It's just such a great little oasis in that area. It still has that cozy, warm vibe. The food is killer. The wine list is awesome. And the gelatos are delicious.
Yes. Dessert in general, actually.
And thanks so much for listening. Sarah, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for having me on this cold, cold day.
But I'm sure we'll be seeing you soon.
Yeah, we'll see each other.
All right, and thanks for listening. We'll be back next week on In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.